From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Riot police were out in force in Iran Tuesday in an effort to quell 6 days of anti-government protests. The protests have spread to the northwest of Iran. Hundreds have been arrested, more than 20 killed since Thursday. Tuesday, Supreme Leader Ayatollah Khamenei accused the country's enemies of fomenting the unrest. He did not identify who he was referring to, but U.S. UN Ambassador Nikki Haley insisted the unrest is spontaneous.
They are virtually in every city in Iran. This is the precise picture of a long-oppressed people rising up against their dictators.
She said she would attempt to call an emergency Security Council meeting to urge global support for the protesters. Speaking to VOA Tuesday, White House National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster said he understands the Iranian people's frustration.
This is a dictatorial regime that is oppressing its own people, that is using the resources that this great nation with this rich culture and rich history needs to foment hatred and violence across the greater Middle East. They are a driving force behind this fitna, behind this sectarian civil war that has caused so much pain and suffering and death in Syria, in Iraq, in Yemen.
Iran's foreign minister dismissed the criticism, insisting Iranians have a right to protest peacefully and outside infiltrators will not be allowed to sabotage them for violence and destruction. The head of the Roman Catholic Church in the Democratic Republic of Congo has condemned Sunday's crackdown on anti-government protesters, in which at least 8 were killed. Cardinal Laurent Mosegwo Pasinya denouncing the actions of security forces, which he said amounted to barbarism. This is VOA News. Pakistan has expressed deep disappointment with President Donald Trump's New Year's Day tweet criticizing Pakistan for providing safe haven for terrorists operating in Afghanistan. The president said the U.S. has received nothing but lies and deceit for billions in aid. Both civil and military leaders in Pakistan described it as completely incomprehensible. Pakistani defense analyst Talat Masood said the tweet showed little sympathy for the suffering of the Pakistani people in the fight against extremism.
The people of Pakistan, the governments of Pakistan, have been really seriously affected, and its consequences are felt every day by Pakistanis.
White House National Security Advisor McMaster was asked about Mr. Trump's tweet in a VOA interview.
This is not a blame game, as some would say. This is really our effort to communicate clearly to Pakistan that our relationship can no longer bear the weight of contradictions, and that we have to really begin now to work together to stabilize Afghanistan in a way that would be a huge benefit to Pakistan as well.
In Afghanistan, meanwhile, one U.S. service member was killed, 4 wounded, during what is described as a combat engagement Monday in the eastern province of Nangarhar. Egypt Tuesday hanged 4 Islamic militants following their conviction for the killing of 3 military cadets in 2015. Meanwhile, authorities extended the country's state of emergency first imposed after deadly bombings of Coptic Christian churches in April. Moldovan President Igor Dodon Tuesday criticized the country's constitutional court for suspending his powers in a dispute over ministerial appointments. He said the court has confirmed its image as an obedient political instrument. Mr. Dodon is at odds with the ruling coalition government, which seeks better ties with the West. Last year was the safest on record for commercial aviation, according to 2 organizations. No major airline experienced a plane crash anywhere in the world in 2017. Todd Curtis heads the website airsafe.com.
The last time there was a calendar year with not a single passenger killed, either through a jet airliner accident or a deliberate action like a hijacking or bombing, the last year that happened was 1959.
Every year since then, he said, there's been one jet event at which at least one passenger was killed. Even as global air traffic increased, the Dutch aviation consultancy 270 said the chances of dying in a plane crash dropped to 1 in 16 million. In Peru, at least 36 were killed Tuesday when a bus collided with a truck and careened off an 80-meter cliff north of the capital, Lima. U.S. stocks started the new year in positive territory Tuesday. One index, the Nasdaq, closing above 7,000 points for the first time ever. That index driven by tech issues like Apple and Facebook. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, and today is Wednesday, January the 3rd, 2018. And here are some of the stories we are covering for you. In the DRC, the head of the Roman Catholic Church has condemned the crackdown on protests against President Joseph Kabila as barbarism. And the Kenyan government has put on hold the building work of a fence along the border with Somalia after a week-long standoff between the Kenyan security forces and Somali residents of the border town of Beled Hawo.
I think the Kenya and Somali governments are neighbors, and I think they will be neighbors for many years to come, and I think they have to address the issues that matter to both the countries.
Somali Minister of Interior and Federal Affairs Abdi Farah Sayid. And Uganda's President Yoweri Kaguta Museveni has signed into law the controversial Constitution Amendment Bill, popularly known as the Age Limit Bill, that was recently passed by Parliament.
The law gives him that authority. In this case, he has signed it. The bill is signed by the President this year, the Constitution Amendment Act 2017.
Chris Obori is Uganda's parliamentary spokesperson. And Nigerians who fled their country because of the Boko Haram insurgency say that their hope for the new year is to return home. And in South Africa, water shortages are crippling Cape Town. Those stories and more are coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. We start off in the DRC, where the head of the Roman Catholic Church, Cardinal Roland Mosenguo, condemned a crackdown on protests against President Joseph Kabila, calling them an act of barbarism. This escalates a confrontation between the government of Joseph Kabila and one of the country's most powerful institutions. Security forces in the DRC killed at least 7 people in the capital, Kinshasa, on Sunday during demonstrations that Catholic activists organized to protest Kabila's refusal to step down from office. In a rare appearance before the media, Cardinal Roland Mosenguo accused security forces of opening fire on peaceful protesters and desecrating places of worship. Uganda's President Yoweri Kaguta Museveni has signed into law the controversial Constitution Amendment Bill, popularly known as the Age Limit Bill, that was recently passed by Parliament. But Uganda opposition says that they will challenge the bill in the courts of law. Reporter Mugume Davis Rwakarinji files from Kampala, Uganda.
Chris Obore, parliamentary spokesperson, confirmed President Museveni signed the bill before the end of 2017. He says it is the prerogative of the president to sign the bill into law.
The law requires him to sign. Oh, not to sign. The law gives him that authority. In this case, he has signed it. The bill is signed by the president this year, the Constitution Amendment Act 2017.
The bill was voted by the majority, 317 MPs, mainly from the ruling party, the National Resistance Movement, or NRM, while 97 MPs voted against it. The law effectively removes the age cap as a requirement for one stand for the presidency of Uganda. This means that President Museveni is now eligible to contest for another term of office. Previously, the Ugandan constitution required a person to stand for the presidency to be between 35 to 75 years of age. Wilfred Niwagaba, the opposition parliamentarian, says the bill was introduced in bad faith and is meant to favor President Museveni.
We will, I can confirm to you, challenge this law in the courts of judicature, and it will be up to the members of the bench to either allow themselves to be used and abused as parliamentarians way, or they stand their ground and administer justice according to the wishes of the people.
The law also extends the term of office for members of parliament from 5 to 7 years. Move of the bill, parliamentarian Rafael Majezi says the opposition must respect the majority of MPs who voted for the amendment.
Let's move with what we have now, rather than wasting the time and resources of Ugandans with litigation and running up and down. I don't see anything wrong that really calls for anybody going to court.
Niwagaba and 6 other MPs were dismissed by Speaker Rebecca Kadaga as the debate to amend the constitution went on. He claims the bill is against the will of majority Ugandans.
The legislature has now collapsed, under the face of Vice Presidency. The executive corrupts a long time ago because the executive is only headed by one man who claims to be the sole visionary who has killed all institutions. So the next target will be the judiciary.
Senior judicial officers, including Supreme Court President, were appointed by President Museveni. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinj.
The Kenyan government has put on hold the building work of a fence along the border with Somalia after a week-long standoff between Kenyan security forces and Somali residents of the border town of Beled Hawo, who allege that the fence is encroaching on Somali soil. Kenya says the fence is vital for its security. Residents say it's violating Somali territory. Meanwhile, the Somali government has dispatched a high-level delegation led by the Minister of Interior and Federal Affairs, Abdi Farah Sayid, to visit the border. After touring this area, Minister Sayid told VOA's Harun Maruf that there's not conclusive evidence that the fence is being built on the Somali side of the border, but he says that his government will not tolerate violation of its territorial integrity.
We just have visited the Mandera Beled Hawo district, and there's a border and a fence that the Kenya government has started some time ago. It's about 7 kilometers long. It is not in, it's on hold at the moment. And we will just say that we have a team of experts to evaluate if that fence is inside Kenya territory or outside or to the Somali border. And that we will determine, we'll file a report, and that report will be evaluated in due course, and we will discuss with the Kenyan counterparts, and hopefully we will reach an amicable solution for this issue.
The concern from the Somali locals along the border is that Kenya is building this border on the Somali side of the border. What have you seen there?
We don't have any conclusive evidence on that issue to say exactly on the record at the moment, but whatever record we have, we will share with our government, and we will discuss with the Kenyan counterparts.
What's your government's position principally on building a fence along the border between Somalia and Kenya?
Our government's position is to not to interfere with the Somalia territorial integrity. That's our main concern. And if our territorial integrity is violated, that's a subject which will be discussed. But that's that will be another discussion.
And at the moment, this 7-kilometer-long border fence, did it encroach into Somali territory?
I cannot say that for conclusively.
Kenya is claiming that it's building this fence because of security reasons. Is Somalia ready to address security concerns by Kenya?
I think the Kenya and Somali governments are neighbors, and I think they will be neighbors for many years to come. And I think they have to address the issues that matter both the countries. Security is an issue. It's an issue for Kenya. It's an issue for Somalia. And it's an issue that we have to solve it together.
Is the border closed at the moment?
No, the border is not closed. The fence construction is on hold at the moment.
And are there any plans to build customs border points so that people can move on either side of the border?
Absolutely. And the Somali side, the customs already has been renovated. And the Somali immigration officer was with us. And it's operational.
Somali Minister of Interior and Federal Affairs Abdi Farah Sayid. He was speaking to VOA Somali Service reporter Harun Maruf. The Zimbabwe Election Resource Center, or ERC, a nonpartisan think tank and advocacy institution on elections and democracy, has written a letter to President Emmerson Mnangagwa arguing him to introduce a raft of reforms to ensure free and fair elections ahead of the crucial polls this year. The organization has also petitioned Parliament and Ethics Minister Ziyambi Ziyambi. Mr. Mnangagwa has promised that Zimbabwe would hold free and fair and credible elections this year, adding that he would work hard to build a new democracy. But ERC Director Tawanda Chimene says that the president must walk the talk and ensure that the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission is independent and that prisoners and those in the diaspora are eligible to vote in the 2018 general elections. 22 opposition parties under the banner of the Zimbabwe National Electoral Reform Agenda have held protests and petitioned the government to institute reforms since last year. Minister Ziyambi tells VOA Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that the country's electoral laws are compliant with the African Union and the Southern African Development Community guidelines.
Yes, Blessing, as regards the SADC and AU guidelines, in our considered view, Zimbabwe is within the SADC and AU guidelines. We've looked at our laws, we've looked at the SADC guidelines. Everything that they are complaining about is clearly covered within our constitution and our laws. Our constitution clearly stipulates that ZEC is an independent body, not subject to the control of anyone, and that is in compliance with the SADC and AU guidelines. And it clearly lays out the work of ZEC, and our electoral laws, they are compliant with everything that is there. So insofar as we are concerned, we believe that we should not just waste resources doing cosmetic changes to the legislation that are already materially covered by the existing legislation.
There was also concern that ZEC was not independent because it was not controlling its budget. Has this been rectified?
That is not true, Blessing. You may recall that last year I was the Portfolio Committee Chair of the Justice, Legal and Parliamentary Affairs Committee. We raised this when we noticed that the budget for ZEC was under the Minister of Justice. And we pointed that to Honorable Chinamasa that that was an anomaly. And he agreed. And last year, ZEC was receiving their appropriation directly from Minister of Finance. And that is the same thing this year. In fact, the Minister, Honorable Chinamasa, has already set aside within the current budget an amount for elections, an amount of which if any players feel it's not adequate, they are free to go to the Portfolio Committee of Justice to raise their concerns, to raise the argument, so that as we debate the budget, parliamentarians will then debate on behalf of the various stakeholders to say that for ZEC to adequately carry out its mandate, can we ensure that a budget of so much is included, and then Parliament passes that budget.
Lastly, Honorable Ziyambi, there is a concern about the right to vote with some of the electoral monitoring bodies arguing that prisoners and Zimbabweans in the diaspora have the right to vote. What's your take on that?
Yes, thank you very much. Like I said earlier, we had an indaba in Bulawayo where we deliberate on most of these electoral issues. And the conclusion then, which was not challenged by most of these civic society organizations which were present when the experts and the legal experts who were making presentations did their presentations, was that we have a legal framework that adequately covers most of these areas, and there was no need for us to go that route. However, let me say that at this juncture, we cannot go to those specific issues regarding the diaspora vote, the right of the prisoners, because after that indaba, they decided to take the issues to court. So we await the determination of the court, and the court, I understand, is sitting on the 8th of January. Once that determination has been given, we then know the direction to proceed.
That was Zimbabwe's Justice Minister Ziyambi Ziyambi speaking with VOA's Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare. Water shortages are crippling Cape Town in South Africa. The popular tourist destination hosts thousands of visitors at this time of the year. Level 6 restrictions were introduced on January 1st. This means residents can be fined for excessive usage of water. Each person is allowed to use 87 liters, that is just under 23 gallons of water daily. If they use more than their rationed amount, they can be fined. Other restrictions include that residents of Cape Town may no longer top up their pools. No washing of cars. So locals are finding creative ways to cool down their children at the heart of the South African summer, as the use of portable pools has also been stopped. From Cape Town, Nadia Sami spoke to a resident who is desperately trying to cut back her water usage.
Now, Dolores, you've lived in Cape Town your entire life. Do you ever remember any other time in this country where water restrictions were as bad as they are now?
Well, I can't remember exactly, but I think they were. but it wasn't that bad as it is now.
How have you personally changed your behavior in your home in order to save water?
Well, we've started taking short showers, and we use a bucket in the shower to catch all the water, and we use that water in the toilet or in the garden. Well, the plants that I have at the back, because I don't have a garden anymore because I can't use the water for the garden. So, yeah, that's what we do. We try to save as much as we can.
How do you believe the City of Cape Town authorities have handled the water shortage? You hear messages every day in the media about officials saying you need to use less water or else there will be fines, etc. How do you think they've handled the situation?
Well, just today we went to the beach, and when we got to the beach there, the council, they were actually watering the grass, and they're using sprinklers. There was about 4 or 5 sprinklers on, and it wasn't even a proper lawn. It was they watering the sand and that, but they wanting us to save water, but they don't set an example for us. Mm-hmm. They were, and it was for quite a few hours, because when we went to the beach, the waters were on, running and all that, and when we came back, it was still on.
Cape Town is traditionally extremely busy over the festive season, and just like every other year, there are constant visitors and the hotels are busy, etc., etc. It's a tourist hotspot.
Mm-hmm.
Are you nervous that after the season comes to an end, the situation will be more dire for locals?
Oh, yes, I am, because I myself have some visitors over here, and I don't know what my account is going to be. It's quite scary, because they're probably going to increase our water, the amount that we're going to pay there by the end of the month, and, yeah, it is scary. Mm. I don't know what's going to happen.
Has there been any communication at all from the municipality about making concessions for people during the holidays, because so many households have got families visiting? Has there been any communication like that?
No, not really, not that I know of.
Cape Town resident speaking to reporter Nadia Sami. Nigerians who fled their country because of the Boko Haram insurgency say their hope for the new year is to return home, but they say their government should help to socially reintegrate them. Moki Edwin Kinzeka visited a refugee camp at Minawo and the village of Gawar on Cameroon's northern border with Nigeria to find out the refugees' wishes for the new year.
It is a festive atmosphere at Gawar village, one of the communities in the Mayochanaga administrative unit on Cameroon's northern border with Nigeria, hosting thousands of Nigerian refugees. Staff of the World Lutheran Federation, WLF, a global communion of 145 churches in 98 countries, share gifts and pray with Nigerians fleeing Boko Haram atrocities in their country. Obin Nzali of the WLF says they have organized an outreach program that will last 2 weeks to encourage both the refugees and their host communities to continue to live in peace. He says the presence of the refugees has an impact on the living conditions of the host communities, whose resources are already stretched, and so they have brought together the refugees and their host community members as a sign of encouragement and to promote the spirit of living together in such challenging moments. Among those who have come to listen to the message of peace is 28-year-old Emmanuel Kaladjivi, who fled from Borno State in Nigeria in January 2017. He says he lost his brother and has not seen his wife, but is happy that God has allowed him to see another year in good health.
I am very happy. So many people die in 2017, but as God delivers in life, now We're very happy to see this new year.
Emmanuel says his wish is to return to Nigeria and reunite with his relatives and friends, but he is still expecting assurances from the governments of Cameroon and Nigeria that the torture people endure at the hands of Boko Haram has ended and they can live in peace. Gawa village is situated 5 kilometers from the Minawawo refugee camp, which is home to some 72,000 refugees. In 2017, 12,000 people arrived. Thousands voluntarily expected to return, according to the government of Cameroon. 40-year-old Ali Shoek, who arrived in the camp 3 years ago, says he is not yet thinking of returning. He says he does not want to relive the horror he experienced when Boko Haram raided his village of Atargara in northern Nigeria, killing so many and torching all the houses, making them refugees after he escaped. To him, living in the camp is better than taking an adventure to his hometown without knowing if peace has returned.
We always come together to worship in one center. And after the mass in the morning, at about 12, we go to a certain place where we have the band. The people are dancing, chatting, sharing gifts among friends and well-wishers.
The governments of Cameroon and Nigeria, together with UNHCR, signed the tripartite agreement for the voluntary repatriation of Nigerian refugees living in Cameroon in May 2017. WLF's Annette Mbane says they are also advising the refugees that their repatriation can only take part on voluntary basis.
The accord signed between Cameroon government, Nigerian government, and the UNHCR is all about putting in place the legal framework to permit the refugees going back to Nigeria in a safe and dignified condition.
A UNHCR survey conducted in Minawawa on the intentions of refugees to return to Nigeria revealed that 7 out of every 10 people expressed their intention to return as soon as the situation is safe in their areas of origin. In May 2017, the United Nations reported that food shortages in northern Cameroon were raising tensions between local communities and Nigerian refugees displaced by the Boko Haram conflict. The government said just 1/3 of the $690 million needed to meet the needs of displaced people and host communities this year has been received. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Minawawa, Northern Cameroon.
And that's it for this Wednesday, January 3rd edition of Daybreak Africa. Join us again tomorrow for more African news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, I'm Jackson Vonganyi in Washington, wishing you a good day, Africa.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. African Beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Van Dee, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC GMT. On the internet, you can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.
Interested in deeper analysis of news and events in Africa? Then plan to join me, Douglas Impuga, on Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll have African journalists and expert guests discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. So plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
VOA News is always at the tip of your finger.
All the news you want about Africa and the world, day and night, is available on voaafrica.com.
voaafrica.com.
Make it your first source of news and information.